Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here we go. 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 This is it.
This is Top Flight Time Machine. I am Andy Dawson.
I'm Sam Delaney.
And we stand here today. We are standing up, aren't we? Especially
always
for this.
Saluting as well.
We stand on the cusp, on the brink of podcasting history.
Correct.
Basically, this is...
It's like when they launched Channel 4.
Or even Channel 5.
Yeah, with the Spice Girls. Yeah. We should have hired the Spice Girls. They were available
it
for bookings.
It wouldn't have been difficult, would it?
Yeah.
This is the first episode of the Keen Odyssey 2, which in a typically cack-handed kind of way, we are doing Roy's first book, second, after we've already dealt
Origin
with
story.
Origin story,
exactly,
yeah,
what George Lucas did with Star Wars.
When he went back and did the first three ones.
You find the background. Who was he? Where did he come from? Who was his father?
Who will emerge as Jar Jar Binks?
Yes.
In this.
Was he formed by Medichlorians and didn't actually, wasn't born by spunk and eggs like...
Like everyone else. Like
a normal,
rest of us.
Like Chewbacca was.
What an image. So let's start at the beginning, I suppose, Sam.
Do we not need to recap the story so far?
Do we?
Of what happened? Well, basically, in the second book, what we learnt was Roy Keane had a run-in feud with the fictional wooden crow?
Woodpecker.
Woodpecker, Professor Yeffle.
From Bagpuss.
Out of Bagpuss. He fell out with loads of people, not least Carlos Queiroz, Jim Magilton, and...
Pablo Canuga.
And Pablo Canuga, author of the legendary memoir, This and That. And then in the end, he gave it all up, became a pundit, had a dodgy trip to Africa with Marcel Desailly. He
ended up with some explosives
on
his bag. And spent a lot of time retreating in his spider hole.
Yeah.
I can't remember what else.
And that was it. It was just very angry. But now, this is where we embark upon the beginning of his life and the first half of his professional football career and find out what made him so angry. I mean, that's the question that I want answered from this, do you?
Well, I've got lots of questions, but they'll unfurl themselves as we go along.
All right.
It opens with an introduction chapter, which doesn't begin at the beginning. It begins at the 2002 World Cup, where, of course, he had a massive barney with Mick McCarthy, Ireland manager.
Stick up your bollocks, you English cunt.
Yep.
Best line ever, isn't it?
Yeah.
In football.
In literary history.
It really is.
It's in the history of humanity.
Genuine opinion, I think stick up your bollocks, you English cunt, is up there with anything Shakespeare ever wrote.
Yeah, it says everything and more in the space of just a few words.
It's powerful and poetic. Most of all, it's just a unique use of language delivered with spontaneity.
Yeah.
I very much doubt Roy Keane sat thinking of that in his bedroom in Saipan the night before. It blurted out. And you've got to remember, if we're comparing Shakespeare and Roy Keane, which is what we are doing, let's face it, Shakespeare sat with his fucking quill at his desk or whatever they...
Fucking 8 hours a day.
Whatever excuse for a fucking desk they had in them times, right? Probably in a muddy pit.
Back of a dead ox or something like that.
Yeah, right? Fucking slaving over all of this, you know, to be or not to be
wank
bullshit. And fair enough, he did some good lines, but he sat there writing, rewriting, thinking, wringing his hands, going for a fag.
Walking up and down.
Contemplating.
Wanking.
Keen, bang. Stick it up your bollocks, you English cunt.
It's kind of like you can, as you say, he wouldn't have pre-rehearsed it, but there's a lot going on in there that's obviously just been distilled down into that one sentence at that one moment.
Yes.
The stuff that he's been thinking about and dwelling on and brooding over, and then it just all perfectly distilled, like a diamond.
If you are capable of conveying a million and one different emotions, feelings, thoughts and messages in one simple line like that.
Mm.
That is true art.
Yeah.
And that is what he did. And of all of his many, many achievements that we're going to go through as we delve through this book, that's perhaps his greatest. Stick it up your bollocks. How do you stick something up your bollocks? This is the thing that right from the first moment I heard this quote, which was probably within hours of it being delivered because it's spread around the world like a virus. My first instinct, I mean, it's like JFK dying or Diana dying. You always remember where you were.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting at home, this coming across my radar and me thinking...
You have a radar?
I've got radar. Beep, beep. Beep, beep. Ah, sounds like there's been a commotion in Japan.
Did you press a button and some kind of paper beep, feed comes out of it? Tear it off?
Like, you know, like when you see old films of how the stock exchange reports came through on little strips of paper.
Yeah.
News from Saipan, Japan. Stop. World Cup Island squad meltdown. Stop. Stick it up your bollocks, you English cunt. Stop. I thought, that's got to be Kino. How do you stick something up your bollocks? Sounds horrible.
And he says English. Must be about McCarthy.
Yeah. I worked it out pretty quick, but that's the journalist in me, Andy.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Sam's radar. So he starts with that basically in the book, and he says, almost 31. I knew this would be probably my last shot at a World Cup. I knew the Irish setup was less than perfect. Everyone knew that. But even by Irish standards, the past week had been beyond belief. Beneath the calm front, I was really angry and hurt. Angry about the unprofessionalism in the Irish camp, the absence of real ambition, the going through the motions approach to a tournament that ought to be the goal of every footballer. We were Irish. We did it our way. That was the boast. The world loved us, we told ourselves. Weren't we the cabaret act? They had to get the party going before leaving when the tournament got serious. Then back home for another party to celebrate the one good result we usually got. Watch the final stages on telly. Great.
It does sound great. As I read that, I just thought, that sounds great.
It sounds much better
than, you know, the team like Germany. They go out, win. There's no fun.
Efficiently win.
Efficiently win.
Win.
Work. You work for the result. You train. You win. You go to sleep.
You're stripped of your identity. Up. You are only Germany. You become Germany.
Yeah. You are the German flag. You are Johnny Deutscher. Right? But it's boring. And then get to the end of it and they do not celebrate. Move on to next challenge.
Prepare for 2006.
Yeah. But how he just described the Irish attitude made me think, fucking great.
But that's why Roy is Roy.
Mm.
And we're not.
Maybe he would have been happier born a German.
Probably, yeah. So he says, was that why we got through our group? Knocked out Holland, finished unbeaten, second to the Portuguese? Not for me. I was a Manchester United player. We only partied when we won. So, yeah, he's talking about his journey back from Japan. On the plane, he says, on the flight, I watched some DVDs. Fawlty Towers, good old Basil.
Yeah.
He could manage Ireland.
Best bit. Best bit in the intro. And the flight. I watched some DVDs. Fawlty Towers. Good old Basil. Have you seen that? Have you seen that programme, Fawlty Towers?
The documentary about the hotel.
It's about a madman runs a hotel down in Turkey, I think it is. Absolute fucking chaos. But the problem is, everyone blames him, but he's got this daft Spanish waiter. He's holding him back. His wife's holding him back. The waiter, the waitress, it's a fucking mess. He's got this mad old man who lives in there full time. I don't know whether he's paying or what. Calls himself the Major. It's an absolute fucking catastrophe. I feel for the fella.
He's the only one who knows what's going on, but he's got all these cunts holding him back and dragging him down. Now, to me...
Unprofessional.
To me, I felt as though, in Saipan, I was Basil Fawlty. And Mick McCarthy, he was the little Spanish fella.
He was Manuel.
And I wanted to hit him on the head with a spoon. But I couldn't do that because it was a hierarchy. Mick was the boss. I wasn't.
Robbie Keane, star of the show back then. He was like Polly, the waitress. He meant well. He was pretty enough.
Bit sexy.
But he was pretty enough. He's attractive. But you know, when the chips were down, it's no use whatsoever.
And the wife, Sybil. I'm not sure who she was, but I kind of found her a lot sexier the older I got. Do you know what I mean? When I was a younger man, I didn't find her all that sexy. But then I got a bit older and I started thinking about her a lot. Even more than Polly. Where have I gone with this? I'm not sure.
In a way, watching it on the plane only made me worse. I was trying to relax and put it out behind me. I saw Fawlty Towers. I thought, oh, fuck me.
Here we go
again.
This
is Saipan all over again. Welcome to hell, I thought.
Not for the first time. And certainly not for the last.
Yeah, it's great that he watches that on the way back. He goes on, he's real keen on British Airways generally. He really used, at this stage in the book, I had low hopes for it. Because we should remember as well that Roddy Doyle wrote the previous one that we did.
Yeah.
Second volume, whereas this was Eamon Dunphy, former footballer himself, of course.
Yeah, a notable writer and journalist, but also a little bit poor-faced and up himself.
Yeah, and he's no Roddy Doyle.
He's no Roddy Doyle, of course he's not.
And first,
Eamon, you know Roddy Doyle.
You know Roddy Doyle, who I haven't met yet. But when I do my second volume of my memoirs, which I'll be doing with him in 10 years from now, you'll be nowhere near that. My literary style has to move on, Eamon. So because Eamon Dunphy and Roy Keane are using up quite a lot of word count, right, in the style of when you read down a bunch of it. Just some points. Since when we arrived in Hong Kong, there was somebody from British Airways waiting for me. And while he had discovered our flight was late, booked me on a late flight to London. First class. A bed.
Going
to
be David Peace there.
I was ready for sleep.
A bed. A bed for sleeping in.
A bed. The blanket. The blanket and the pillow. The pillow for me head. Me head with me brain. Me brain with me tarts. Me tarts with all the anger and the rage and the confusion.
Thinking about Basil Fawlty. Round the clock.
So he's really chuffed to have been pumped first class. Bear in mind, he's got a fair few quid in the bank by this stage. He's been playing for Man United for about 10 years. But he's absolutely delighted. And he goes, I'll never forget British Airways. They were brilliant. Just brilliant all the way. It's straight into Partridge here, isn't it?
I
couldn't sleep. My head was racing. I watched a video. Denzel Washington in Training Day. Not very good.
There's no Fawlty Towers, put it that way.
It's absolutely fucking ludicrous. He's a police officer in somewhere in America, I don't know where. But I don't know whether it would sit in the future or in space or what, but it wasn't like any police officer I'd ever seen
before.
There
was certainly no parallels to the 2002 World Cup.
The two air hostesses were really kind. We support you 100%, they said. They were making breakfast. I went to the galley to chat to them.
Oh, God.
I wonder what I'm thinking, fuck
me. I wonder
me.
What he means by chat. Did he actually chat or did he deliver like
I can't sleep.
Did he deliver like a tirade of...
I can't fucking sleep.
And burden himself.
What are yous doing? Well, we're just...
Can I have a go?
Stop doing that. You're cooking breakfast, are you? I'd cook it too. What do you want? Some eggs frying up. Come on. I've got to keep myself busy. It's the kind of animal I am.
I've got an apron in my hand luggage. I take it everywhere. Can you see it? It's got a pair of boobs on, but they're not really boobs.
It's quite funny.
Cartoon boobs.
It's quite funny. It might put a smile on your fucking face. I've noticed you've been looking a bit fucking miserable half this fucking flight.
You're so uptight because of them buns you got in your hair. Is that what it is?
I can't sit still. I need to be doing something. Whether that's playing for Ireland at the World Cup or cooking eggs on a British Airways flight back from Japan.
These are the highest eggs I've ever cooked. Do you know that?
Must be some kind of record. Get Roy Castle on the phone.
Are these the highest ever civilian eggs that's ever been cooked?
I bet they are. That's me. I'm always pushing the boundaries of everything I do.
Ask the captain. No, I'll go and ask him.
I'm going to ask him if I can have a go flying.
This was 2002. That kind of thing was fine then.
No,
it wasn't. It wasn't.
I wonder. I fucking hope that he gets onto his thoughts on 9/11 at some point. See those planes. See those passengers on the planes that led them fellas. Just get in the cockpit and fly. What the fuck were they thinking?
Hey, I said you this though, six words. Jet fuel can't melt steel beams.
Have a little Google of it. There's a documentary. It's on YouTube. It's called Loose Change. It's every bit as good as Fawlty Towers. And it's revealing too.
A lot of parallels with the 2002 World Cup in Saipan.
I don't know who was behind that. I don't know who was behind 9/11.
To me, Osama bin Laden was a little bit like Mick McCarthy.
And if I'd seen Osama, I would have said the same thing to him as I said to Mick. I'd have said, stick it up your bollocks, you Saudi bastard.
So he gets home. United had a car waiting at the airport for him. He was home in 5 minutes. The house was under siege. Reporters, television trailers with their satellite dishes. I thought, hello, is Bill Clinton visiting?
Who's this now? Bill fucking Clinton, is it?
Must have read about it in the papers and come over.
By the way, Bill Clinton wasn't president. It was George W. Bush by that point, wasn't it? Because we were post
9/11. Yeah, 2004.
Who's this former president of the United States? Bill Clinton.
Jimmy Carter's come round.
Come over. Who's this? Harold Truman. Lyndon B. Johnson.
Who's this? Rasputin. They brought him back to life.
He's back, is he? He's a good cock man himself. Not many people know that.
Right, so he thinks Bill Clinton's coming. His wife Teresa says that she hadn't been able to get out of the house and says that the dog hasn't been out for a couple of days.
Triggs.
Triggs. He says, I waited an hour, played with the kids, then got Triggs. Has it been an hour yet?
I asked Triggs. He just looked at me.
That's no... that's nothing about parents playing with their kids at all. They get frustrated an hour, and bored. Yeah. By their demands.
Like, what, like when, if you go to the swimming baths with your kids and you get in the pool and quite quickly you're like, fucking cold and wet.
You're looking at the clock.
And I'm feeling a bit hungry. So you do a deal with them.
Right.
You go, half an hour more. They say, how long have we been in? You know it's 5 minutes, but you go, half an hour. Half an hour more and we'll have been here an hour. Yeah. But then they look at the big clock, the speedo clock that is traditionally mounted on the wall. Mm-hmm. And they fucking clock it. And they so then you know you can't get out. And they go, right, so that'll be 40 minutes past two then.
Yeah.
You go, yeah, you are fucking staring at that clock, aren't you?
You are.
The next 40 minutes.
And then you give them a 15-minute countdown and a 10-minute countdown and then a 5-minute.
And then they're still not fucking
happy. We're out in 2 minutes.
I go, right, you've got two more minutes, so decide what you want to do. Do you want to do another jump? Do you want to do that other game where I throw you? Do you want to play sharks again? Do you want to play water taxi? What is it? Just fucking decide now because we've got time for one thing and one thing only.
Bless them. Wouldn't change them for the world.
Jalapeño.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jalapeño.
So anyway, he says, I waited an hour, played with the kids, then got Triggs. I had nothing to be ashamed of. My life was going to be as normal as it could. Come on, girl, we're going for a walk, he said. And of course, he memorably did, didn't he? Went out and walked the dog.
Yeah, and all the TV cameras got him, yeah.
Yeah.
Him and Triggs.
Triggs is dead now, of course.
Yeah. I wish I had a dog, because...
Do you? You want mine?
I thought you liked your dog.
It's a love hit.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it pain really in needy. The arse? Is it pain in the arse?
It's a half Shih Tzu, which is fair enough, but half Chihuahua. So it looks like a Shih Tzu, but inside there's a Chihuahua working the levers,
right,
controlling the brain.
And that's good. The annoying
jittery,
bit of it.
Scatty, fucking excitable, needy.
Yeah, I just think when I see Roy Keane,
get
and
a proper
he's,
dog like Triggs.
Yeah, he knows when. Dog. Yeah, I wanted to get a Staffy, but most likely I'd get a mongrel because that's what I had growing up. But I remember seeing Roy Keane. I thought, that's get back to normal. A dog, I mean, we're going to get on to it. He has some fantastic thoughts very shortly in this book about dogs and the advantages of having them. But, you know, it does bring you back down to earth because a dog doesn't give a fuck about what's happened in the past or
that's
in the future.
True.
It's just happy to be hanging around with you.
Thinking about its guts.
But my daughter won't let me get one. She hates them. I was with the girl off of Love Island, Laura Ranson, yesterday. She came into, I've been doing a bit of work with her.
You're listening to the Roy Keane podcast.
And she and the dog, she brings her dog with her everywhere. It's a cute little dog. I'm not sure what sort it is, but it's one of those ones that you carry.
You put in a bag or something, yeah.
Yeah, it's that sort of thing.
Bag dog.
And so we went into Talk Radio, because she was going on a show there. And it's also the same little office as you know where Talk Sport is. So it's quite cramped, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So she's let the dog out. She's decided to take it for a walk around the office, this little dog. You know the atmosphere at TalkSport. It's confused them.
Yeah.
Anyway, the dog's walked right into the middle of the Talk Radio offices and taken a shit. Yeah, it was pretty... that was pretty... Anyway, let's get on with the book.
Yeah.
This is it!
So chapter one goes back to the very beginning. He's born in 1971, 10th of August. The fourth of five children... in Mayfield, a northern suburb of Cork. His older brothers, Johnson and Dennis Johnson's a fantastic name, isn't it, for
Dennis
a child.
Johnson.
No.
Oh, Dennis Johnson.
Keane. Johnson Keane.
Yeah, Johnson's great. Said it. So what is a euphemism for cock? That's the only problem.
It is, but probably wasn't back then.
No, not in Ireland either. It's more of an American thing.
His sister Hillary, younger brother Pat, came along later.
Fucking loads of them. He was the youngest, and he says that had an impact on him because he was
the
youngest.
Fourth.
No, until the fifth. Oh,
at the time.
There was quite a big period.
Well, we're all the youngest at some point, aren't we?
Yeah, but he said, well, take it up with him, mate. This is in the book. Hell. He says that for a while he was the youngest, and that it made him a bit spoilt. Anyway, he writes very affectionately about Cork. He says, I'm passionately proud of my roots. When asked about their origins, Cork people invariably reply with a mischievous grin, Irish by birth, Cork by the grace of God. Now, I know that there's some people listening who are perhaps from Cork or know the area well, and we've had a great response from the people of Cork to our... Cork to our impressions.
The accuracy of our impressions of Roy.
And because of that, it's gone down so well with the Irish, we may well do a live event in Cork soon. Because also, just reading the book and the passionate way in which he writes about the place. I mean, I've been there once. You've been there? It's lovely.
No.
Lovely West Coast, yeah. And and so I think we will probably go there. I'm sure we'll be given a real welcome.
Yeah, we'll replicate some of the best moments in the podcast. Maybe we'll stand on a table while we do it.
They'll think Bill Clinton's back, the reaction we get when we come over.
Well, there's a bit, he says, growing up, I was aware that money was always scarce. For example, we never had a car. And that kind of, that's in his DNA, isn't it? That's sort of like, a car? What the fuck would a car for?
What are those two things hanging out the bottom of your ass? They're called legs.
You don't need the car. You just walk. You just factor it into your day. It's time. You can't fight time. Why are you trying to fight time?
I fucking tried, believe me. And I last every time.
So, no car for the Keane family.
He takes up boxing at Brian Dillon's boxing club at Dillon's Cross. He had 4 bouts in the Irish Novice League. Won them all. This was because I was only 9 when I joined up. Regulations didn't permit me to box officially until I was 12. So I ended up training for 3 years.
They were fighting.
I suppose you could describe it as sparring without actually getting involved in a proper bout. You know, I suppose you could describe it as sparring. It's not how I fucking saw it.
If I hadn't sparked anybody out, I wouldn't go home
When my chance eventually came, I must have been the fittest boxer in creation. Wow. We're only on page 3. And he's claimed
that's
he was
line, that.
The fittest boxer in creation.
That's Dunphy's line, that's not Roy.
And the hungriest. I don't know how you want to phrase this, Dunphy, but just say that I was the ultimate fucking boxer. I was, here's a nice way of putting it. Say, even age 12, I was the fucking hardest cunt in Cork.
And beyond.
But think of something more poetic, perhaps. All right there, Roy, don't worry, I've got it covered. What have you written? What's this? The fittest boxer in creation. Sounds, I don't know about that. Sounds a bit girlish.
There's another bit as well, which is quite interesting. Cork's sporting traditions are strong and varied. In our house, soccer was the game. Others preferred the Gaelic games of hurling and football.
Oh, yeah.
And it says, Gaelic games were identified as being truly Irish in a way that other sports such as soccer and rugby could never be. Foreign games, especially those associated with Britain, were frowned upon by the more passionate Gaels. Still, sadly, it is a fact that until a year before I was born, any Gaelic hurler or footballer caught attending a soccer or rugby match was automatically banned for life.
Yeah.
Whoa!
Sensational, that is, isn't it?
That's brilliant.
Absolutely couldn't
Hardcore.
Fucking believe it. Dennis Irwin, who, of course, I think in the first deep dive, there was a plan to open, I don't know if it was ours or Roy's plan, to open a whole load of Dennis Irwin themed restaurants.
I think Dennis
that
was
just
gonna
did.
Open them, wasn't
oh,
he?
That was it. Of course, there was just water, just served water and bread, I think.
Yeah. And everyone got to wear a grey cardigan.
But
it was so long ago, I've forgotten now.
Roy really admires Dennis Irwin because Dennis Irwin was good enough. He goes, before finally choosing soccer, I had a go at hurling and boxing. My hurling career was brief, unlike Dennis Irwin, who was a very accomplished hurler, considered good enough to make the Cork County team if he'd stuck at it. So there you go, a man of many mysteries, isn't he?
Yeah.
Many surprises. Dennis Irwin, great at hurling.
Yeah.
That's what they used to say about him.
That was the rhyme we all used to sing in the playground.
We'd chase him and we'd sing it. And he'd scuttle away saying, stop rhyming at me.
Get out of me head. Dana Serwin, great at hurling. Dana Serwin, great at hurling. Oh!
Fuck off, will yous? And that's why in the end he gave it up and he chose soccer instead.
But did you, there's a bit just after that as well where Roy talks about how his hurling career ended.
Oh, yeah, with the splinter.
In what could be described as a clash of the ash, the base of my hurley broke and a splinter shot into the back of my leg, causing a wound that took the best part of 6 months to heal.
That's it. I'm done with hurling now.
I didn't take it out. I just left it there. I decided that the body would deal with it itself. The body would expel it.
Ma'am, get away from me with those fucking tweezers. We don't need tweezers. If God put the piece of wood in me ass, then God can take it out again. And if it doesn't come out, and if I go rotten and my ass falls off, then that's God's will.
Plan.
For me, Roy Keane. So we wait and see. And what it told me was I decided that hurling wasn't for me.
God had given me a second chance. I decided to play football.
This is it!
When he was 12, he entered Mayfield Community School. Mm. He says, my brother Johnson, the brothers Johnson, they were good group. What did they say again? Was it Strawberry Letter?
Yeah. And Stomp as well.
My brother Johnson had established a keen profile at the school. Mm. He'd gone in and put a marker down.
Established the keen profile. It's a nice way of putting it. Tell him everyone was shite scared of the Keens when we got there because my brother had smashed a few fucking skulls before I got there. Write that down, Dumphy.
As they said in Advertising World, the Keen brand had been well established at this point.
I'm just going to write something about the Keen brand. I think it might be a bit better. No, right there they'd smash some fucking skulls and everyone shaved their pants when I walked through the gates.
Dunphy, you said here, as a consequence, I was behind the eight ball from day one. What the fuckery fuck does that mean?
You're talking nonsense, well,
that's
man.
Just a little bit of a literary flourish I've put in there.
Literally what?
I got it from that American fellow who does all the crime novels. I've forgotten his name now.
Do you know what you remind me of? You write a book like that fucking Cristiano Ronaldo used to fuck around with the football. Ah, the stepovers and the flourishes. I wouldn't have it from him and I'm not having it from you.
If you're going to write a book, sit down. You start at the beginning, you tell a story and then you finish and then you fuck off.
Write a book. You know, I should have got fucking Dennis Irwin to write this for me. There's a man who doesn't fuck around.
As a consequence, I was behind the eight ball from day one. First class teacher, name, me, Keane, Roy Keane, teacher. Are you Johnson's brother? Yes. Oh, right. His rather grim expression didn't really require elaboration. I was a marked man, one to watch out for. I did get into a spot of embarrassing trouble one day when me and a friend, Anthony Keneally, I think it is, were caught reading a couple of so-called dirty books.
Uh-oh. I can't imagine Roy enjoying that sort of thing.
No.
What's this? Why's she got no clothes on, for God's sake? She catch her fucking death.
Where's his winkle gone? I kind of see it. What's happening?
What's he done with it now? No, I don't like this.
Odd me, mummy. The books were confiscated. The embarrassment came a few days later when we were summoned to the headmaster's office to reclaim our reading material. Ah, he exclaimed. The two perverts are here for the dirty books. Briefly shamed and named, we returned to our customary obscurity at the back of the classroom.
This is it!
He then gets picked for the under-15s trials, which is basically a shop window for the English club scouts, make or break stuff. And he says making the Irish team is much more important matter than passing the Intercert, which is the GCSE or whatever they have. So the trials for the international team were held in Dublin. You weren't formally informed if you'd been selected for the trials. Your club received a letter in due course, but the newspapers were first to know. So the newspapers would print the list of who'd been selected for these trials. And then after that, you'd get a letter sent out to your home, which confirmed what you'd seen in the newspaper, that yes, you were going to be doing
as
a trial.
As we informed the Irish Gazette 4 days ago.
That's what he says. He says, one evening after school, I came home to find my dad smiling with a copy of our local paper, the Evening Echo, in his hand. You're in, boy. You're in the trials in Dublin. So he was going there, and so were his Rockmount mates, Alan, Paul, Damien and Len. and they all headed off to Dublin by train. He thinks he played well and he was substituted with 15 minutes to go, and he thought it was because the selectors had seen enough to pick him. But when the news came of who'd been chosen from the trials, again, via the Evening Echo, it was bad news. R. Keane was not there on the names listed. Believe me, he says, I double-checked. This was the worst disappointment of my life. And the word came back that Roy was just too small. And if you look at the bit in the book where, you know, it's got all the pictures and the photographs throughout his life, he was very fucking small. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't had a flick through
well,
that.
Well, you can do that later on.
But, I'm doing it now, mate.
No, well, you can if you want.
I can fucking look. Oh, yeah, he's small. I can confirm he's a little lad, yeah.
I wonder if he did any stuff to make him grow.
I love this stuff where he's got a little suit on.
Is the one there where he's sitting on Santa's knee and he's really fucked off? I think it's on the first Santa. Page of the...
Who the fuck is this fucking clown? Oh, yeah. He's crying.
Fraudster.
It's a particularly shit Santa, I've got to say. Irish Santa.
And the jacket that his brother's got on is incredible as well.
Yeah. Very shiny leather jacket with a fur collar.
We'll tweet that out, I think, in conjunction with this episode. So he gets another trial at Brighton, but we're going to leave it there for this episode because we're on the brink of what I can only describe as Roy on the dole.
Yeah,
and
as we've
ran out of time for this episode, there doesn't seem any point in going into that because it could take quite a while. It could be an episode of its own, Roy on the dole, but it involves watching a lot of Neighbours. Not watching the Neighbours through the curtains.
No.
You know,
Roy
next door.
Watching the lamented Australian soap opera Neighbours. Oh, is it?
Yeah, still on Channel 5. But yeah, lamented fits. Paul Robinson's still in it.
This is not Jim Robinson. Oh, yeah, because Jim Robinson became super famous on American TV, didn't
Paul
he?
Paul Robinson, who's played by Stephen Dennis, he's still in it.
Don't it make you feel good?
Yeah.
No, it fucking doesn't, actually, Stephen. It makes me feel fucking depressed. I've been rejected by Brighton.
Jim Robinson came back into it at Christmas in a Dream sequence.
Did
he? Did.
Yeah, I wish I'd watched that. I'll YouTube it.
Look forward to our deep dive on the entire history of Neighbours, episode by episode, coming up in 2023. Yeah, so we'll leave it there for this first part of the Keane Odyssey. We hope we haven't let you down. There's plenty more to come. We're on to page 11 of the book.
Fucking hell. Buckle up. Buckle up for a fucking... How can we make a fucking a review of a book longer than the book itself?
Sit back and listen.
Yeah.
We can do it. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.